We're doing Tehillim. We're up to Perek Mem Bet, the 52nd chapter, and we'll dedicate our learning the Ilui Nishmat Yerucham Fishel Ben Lezer and Rachel. His neshama should have an aliyah. As we saw previously, David HaMelech is now dating his chapters. The chapters now correspond to segments of David's life. And this chapter, David HaMelech composed about that frightful day when David was on the run. His father-in-law, Shaul, wanted him dead. He had spent 3 days without eating. He was on the verge of dying of hunger. And he went to the Kohen Gadol, to Ahimelech, and he said to him, the king sent me on an important journey. Give me whatever food you have. And Ahimelech gave him from the holy bread, assuming that David was going on a journey on behalf of the Jewish people. He also gave him the sword of Goliath, when in fact David had lied to him. David's life was in danger, and David didn't have a choice, so David lied to him. And at the time, there was King Saul's general, Doeg HaAdomi. He was there praying before God at the location of the Ark with the Kohen Gadol. And David then asked the Kohen Gadol, Ahimelech, let me ask God a few questions the way a general was allowed to do. A general was allowed to ask the high priest to ask questions on his behalf through the Urim V'Tumim, through the breastplate. And Ahimelech did as David asked him, because up until that day, David was the trusted general of King Saul. So Ahimelech didn't know that King Saul wanted David dead. And afterwards, Doeg came to Shaul and said, oh, Ahimelech helped David out, he gave him food, he treated him like a king, he asked God on his behalf. And because of what Doeg said, King Saul rounded up the Kohanim and ordered them killed, and then Doeg himself killed Ahimelech and all the Kohanim from the city of Nov. And so,
Nov,
the city of Nov. So when David got word of that, so David compiled the following chapter. Lamnatzeach maskil le David. The following song of praise, King David composed maskil, which one understanding is out of deep thought. David HaMelech composed the following song. Another understanding is this is an educational song. This is a song that's maskil, that's supposed to teach us about the price of Lashon Hara. Look at what improper speech can cause in the world. Because Doeg HaAdomi spoke improperly, he was under pressure, but he spoke improperly, and that ultimately caused the death of many. Caused the death of the city of Kohanim, caused the death of Doeg ultimately, and caused the death of King Saul. King Saul paid for this sin with his life. Bivoo Doeg HaAdomi Vayaged LeShaul. When Doeg, who was a Jew who lived in Edomite territory, when he came and said to Shaul, Vayomer lo ba David el Beit Ahimelech, he said to King Saul, David came to the house of Ahimelech, the high priest. And David turns to Doeg in his song and says, Matitalel bira'a hagibo. What praise do you take? What glory do you take with the evil that you've done? You who are such a brave warrior in Torah, you who have such potential in Torah, you who have attained such greatness in Torah, how could you take pride in this evil that you've done? Chesed el Kol Hayom. Here there are different interpretations among the commentaries. One understanding is, don't you know that God's kindness is ever present? Chesed Kel Kol Hayom. Don't you realize that God's kindness is always there? So you think that if you killed out the city of Nob, no one's going to help me out. Anyone that hears it will be scared off from helping David, and then you'll catch me. Don't you realize God's kindness is ever present? He'll take care of me. If it isn't Achimelech, it'll be others. By what right did you do such an evil act to kill out the city of Nob? Another understanding is, he says to Doeg, why do you go out against Achimelech? Because you imagine that if not for Achimelech, I'd be dead. No, Achimelech was but a vessel. God's kindness is ever present, and God would have taken care of me through a different venue. Now, however you understand this, this gives us an angle of insight into Lashon Hara. Why do we speak Lashon Hara? Because we imagine that the only reason something is happening is because of X, Y, or Z, and we can take care of that. Why is he ahead of me in the company? Because they think he does a good job. Let me speak badly about him. They'll realize he doesn't do such a good job. I'll get promoted, he'll get demoted. Maybe he'll get fired. Why do I say the Lashon Hara? Because I imagine that the reason he's there, there's a cause and effect that controls the world, and I can control the cause and effect by saying Lashon Hara. And if you think about it, every time we say Lashon Hara, it's that thought. Sometimes we want people to think we're so smart. Sometimes we want people to think he's so dumb. Sometimes we want people to realize what a person he is. But what are we thinking?
There's venting sometimes.
Ask yourself if it's really that.
Sometimes it just really completely disregards someone, and that's the way you express yourself, by putting really down.
Well, why do you have to tell others? That's why are others in the picture? Then it's not that. Okay? Yes?
Here's the question that always bothers me when I read stories like this. Is how could Hashem himself allow for this great Hashem to happen? In other words, as far as we know, the Kohanim didn't do anything out of order, yet it seems as if they were being punished for some horrible act by a whole city of them being wiped out, which usually only happens when most commits idolatry, this happens or that happens. It's like saying that, why do we have these systems of rulings and punishments in place if the righteous are going to be punished anyway? Like,
that's an excellent question. Maybe later tonight we'll be able to get back to that. So David says, in this case, he's reacting to Hashem's kindness. And he's saying, Hashem's kindness is ever present. The reason I was saved was not because of Achimelech per se. And that's something we have to remind ourselves. I don't have to solve every problem. I have to know that, so they think he's a better worker than me. So he's promoted and I'm not. Okay. If I'm supposed to get there, I'll get there. There's a certain perspective, there's a certain balance between my hishtadlut and my realization that Hashem is controlling the world. And when I cross that balance, and Lashon Hara is a prime example of crossing that balance, what I'm saying is, if only they knew this, then things would look different.
But when we say that if there are other people that can do, you can do, other person can do, but you might be busy doing other things. Why put that upon yourself? You know, so I was discussing with Mr. Gilad, and about putting things upon someone, you know, putting someone puts upon himself for the situation that he might be maybe better off. But sometimes you see, it doesn't mean that you are the best person to help someone or to deal with situation or to change something. You really want the help. You are you care.
Are you saying, are you asking? Because I'm not
following. I'm asking.
So I didn't hear a question.
Intonation. The question asked by me is, the thing of, it's true, we can make Lashon Hara because we want to diminish someone and we can take over his place. Chafetz Chaim says in contrast of Israel. Right, that's also enough for Hashem. Maybe more than anything else, because Hashem gave him the tools and the powers of this person to go to be in a different position. But what about us? When we want to fix the world in the sense that we see people with problems and we want to help them. Meaning we already have our problems. Why put up on ourselves their problems? But it's not we don't want their problems. We just want to help.
Why does how does Lashon Hara help them?
It's not Lashon Hara. I'm saying this is okay. Maybe that's a whole way out of the things we're talking about. But since we're talking about there was something that made me ask this.
Okay, we'll have chance later.
Okay.
Yeah.
David Melech actually sort of answers your question in a way. How? Because what he's saying is if you don't have Emunah Shleima and Hashem, then you're going to say Lashon Hara and trust in your own deeds and your own riches, and therefore the Doeg is like, his name's also like Doeg. It sounds like I'm worrying about something. So he's worrying about his standing, and he's like, oh man, I got a good opportunity to throw David into the hands of Shaul and get him. And then I'll be like really high in the eyes of Shaul, and this is my chance. So he did that, and Hashem did what he did. But what does King David say? He says, I trust in Hashem only, and everything's good. All the time you hear in the Tehillim, all this horrible stuff happened to King David, all these big trials and Nisyonot, people dying around him, his best friend getting killed, all this stuff's happening, but he keeps saying, I love you, Hashem, it's all good, it's all going for the good, it's all going for the good. That's the thing, it's like very hard to explain, because that's the whole thing, you just have to have faith. And then even a whole city of Kohanim being wiped out is actually all for the good somehow. But that's a very deep thing. It's like, you can't really understand, I don't understand it, but that's what King David is able to like get through this song. Everything's just still going to the good, you know? There's no bad in the world.
And it's interesting that you trust in Hashem, but still, like, if people look on, they're going to say, ah, a whole city of Kohanim wiped out. See, being righteous doesn't protect you at all.
Well,
you know, so it's very, yeah, I mean, it's like a two-way thing, like, because as far as we know, the Kohanim didn't do anything wrong. It's easy to say, oh, they were wiped out because they did this, or they were wiped out because they did that, even though they were right because they sinned, and this and this big thing, so they got wiped out, but we don't really have that to say here.
It's just why? Like how people ask, why did the Holocaust happen? Why did all those righteous and all that have to go up in flames like that? It's the same question. That same question comes up every single generation. Why did this happen?
Many people stop believing in Hashem because of that.
Yeah. This is the biggest soul. This is the biggest secret of the biggest trial of faith is what are the other Yidden that survived gonna do about it? You know what I'm saying? How are they going to react to such a big catastrophe? Are they going to drop their faith, or are they going to still be strong? You know what I'm saying?
Right, and also, I also may have misheard this somewhere, but I'm pretty sure when Moshe asked to see the face of Hashem, what he was really asking was to see why do bad things happen to good people. Moshe himself had some trouble with this, and Hashem said, I can't tell you that, and you'd be alive. So this goes beyond just, you know, simple question and answer thing that someone can sit down and ask a rabbi or something like that, like, why do bad things happen to good people? And you can give like a straight up answer that's satisfactory all around. It goes way beyond what we on planet Earth understand. We just have to say it's easy, but just to say that it's beyond our like to grasp why this happens.
Okay. I hear. But I do refer you to a series we have online in the Judaism 101 file. There's a 7 or 8 part series on the basics of Judaism, where we also deal with this in one of the first classes. Well, there are only 7 or 8. But we did cover certain aspects of this question. I don't disagree with what you're saying per se. I just think there is more to say. Okay. Back to Tehillim. Wow. You guys have koach?
Yeah.
Or should we call it a night? Yeah? Go to sleep. Go to sleep. Don't feel bad. Laila Tov.
Laila Tov. Shabbat Shalom.
Shabbat Shalom. Those of you who are interested, tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock, the Sachem we're learning. 9 to 10:30. Downstairs.
9 to
10, 10:30.
9
till 10:30.
9 to 10:30.
Say it more.
I have three places.
I have
Tov. Laila Tov. I'm not telling you. Just
ready
to check.
Good. Next week might be in Kohav Yaakov. Stay tuned. 1 week's advance in Kohav Yaakov, 1 week's here.
Oh, because you can't see
that. Okay.
Then we're going to five.
Shabbat Shalom.
Are you okay?
Yeah. You're right.
Back to Tehillim.
Havot tachshov lishonecha kita'al milutash osei remia. Havot means to break. Tachshov lishonecha is what your tongue thinks about, because the tongue represents the thought. The speech represents what you've been thinking about. Kita'al milutash, like a well-sharpened sword, osei remia, that so too you have been able to act in deceit. Just like the sword can cut flesh with the hair, so too you, out of your hatred for me, were able to cut flesh with the hair. Ketal melutash, just like a well-sharpened sword, doesn't just cut the hair, cut some flesh with it. You didn't just hurt me now, you hurt others as well. And so, David HaMelech says, look at where your Lashon Hara got you. So you hate me. And you allowed yourself to kill a whole city of Kohanim with me. And very often, in the heat of the moment, in the hatred of the moment, it's part of the nature of Lashon Hara, that it doesn't discern, it just kills. Ahavta ra mitov sheker midaber tzedek sela. You prefer evil over good. You prefer lies over talking the truth forever. And it's an easy path to take, and it's fascinating that Doeg HaDomi was a chief rabbi. You're not talking about some bum off the street. You're talking about a gibor in Torah. And nonetheless, somewhere inside him, he was off. And that's why David says, Ahavta ra mitov. You prefer doing evil to doing good. And very often people will be learned and will have reasons from here till tomorrow to explain why what they're doing is right, but what they are doing is evil. Ahavta ra mito. Sheker, you prefer lies, midaber tzedek, from talking truth. And if a person wants to check himself, very often this is the litmus test. Am I telling the truth? Why do I get so carried away? Because they have to understand how bad he is. So I'll just embellish what I've said a little bit. No. There you already see you're in trouble. You have no right to lie. But the two go hand in hand. Ahavta chol divrei vala leshon mirma. Ahavta, you love kol divrei vala. Words that swallow up, words that consume. Leshon mirma, your deceitful tongue. Part of the deceit of Lashon Hara is that a person doesn't realize what's being said to protect himself. You stand up and you tell a person, this is what I think of you, so a person can deal with it. There was once a shidduch. Two people met, things were going good, and there was a certain issue that came to my attention. And I felt that one of the sides had to know about it. So first I tried to get the other side to present it to them. And when I saw that wasn't going to work, so I said, look, I think you have to talk about this issue, the two of you. And because we laid the things on the table, I didn't just come and say, well, I think you have to consider this and that and this can't work because of that. We were able to work things out. Very often when you come behind the person's back and you say, you know, so-and-so is this, so-and-so is that, that's it, you finish the person. The person doesn't stand a chance. But if you stab them in the back, right. But if you can lay the cards on the table and then deal with it, so you can deal with it, that's the way you're supposed to deal with it. Doesn't always mean you ignore a problem. So if the girl's dating a guy and he has a drinking problem and he's not telling her, so you have a choice. You can bury your head in the ground and say, well, now my problem. Yes, it is. He's your student. You can't bury your head in the ground. But you could ask him, look, where are you holding? And don't you think you should share it with her? And don't you think you have to put it on the table? And if he's insistent, I'm not going to tell her, and you tell him, look, you've been dry all of 3 weeks, with all due respect. You're not at a point where it's fair to her without putting it on the table. So then you say, okay, look, let's think about how to present it. Let's talk about it. And let's say this doesn't have to be the end of the shidduch, but this has to be something to be dealt with. So the guy doesn't like you at that moment. He's pretty upset. Why are you telling me I have to put it on the table? But in reality, you're trying to do him a favor. So you could say, I'm trying to do him a favor. I'll go to the girl behind his back and I'll tell her, hey, you know, he's not telling. You're not doing him no favor then. But if you force his hand, then you say, look, this is the situation. You can't move forward without putting it on the table. So figure out how, and if you want, we'll do it together, and let's figure out how. So then the couple's married. 3 kids. And it's a beautiful marriage, and it works.
No alcohol in the house.
What? No alcohol in the house, right? 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 No alcohol in the house. Fine. Right. So, but you know what? That's one of the problems of Lashon Hara, that a guy can't defend himself. And that's why Lashon Hara is called Divrei Vala. It's like you swallow. No one notices when you swallow your saliva. You could swallow the other guy up alive and no one knows. He doesn't even know. Why did I suddenly get fired from my job? I had a guy who was, every time I knew him, he was a thief. And then he wanted my recommendation for a job. Now what was I supposed to do? Every time he had sticky hands. Huh? Go to a store, he'd end up with something in his pocket. Now I'm supposed to recommend him to my friends? What am I supposed to do?
What do you do?
So I said to him, look, you have strengths, you have weaknesses. You can't ignore your weaknesses. We both know you have weaknesses. How are you going to be in a store that sells electronics and not walk home with an iPhone? I put him on the spot. I said, look, you want a recommendation? Fine. But let's figure out how this is going to work. So then he says, okay, I could do this job, I could do that job, I can avoid it. And then I say, okay, but what are we going to tell the employer? And how are we going to tell the employer? And what are we going to tell the employer? I often write letters of recommendations for guys. So that puts me in a position where guys very often ask me for letters of recommendation. But guys know that I'm not going to write what I don't know.
It's not going to be easy.
No, I have a lot of good to say. But I'm not going to write something that's a lie. We're going to sit down and figure out together what's fair, what's honest, and fine. We had a guy who was here a total of a month, had no degree, but had a letter of recommendation, and he got a job, this goes back about 4 or 5 years ago, that he still has today with the state of New York. He had a good letter of recommendation. What could I write? I didn't lie. I said he was here by us all of a month. But during that month, he was so diligent, and he worked so hard, and he proved himself, and he made good friends. And I wrote what I could write. So I wrote, I don't know the guy for 50 years, I know him for a month. But then I wrote, okay, but during that month, here's what he showed of himself. Okay, they gave him a shot. They saw such a letter. He didn't have a GED, didn't have anything. Didn't finish high school. But was such a letter, he got a job.
Next time I'll ask you for a letter.
I'm saying, no. Okay, but I wasn't going to lie. But in the truth, there's a lot of good to say. Yeah.
There was a case that exactly is like this out of my personal life where a dear friend of mine was going through the process of conversion. He'd passed, and he was through it. Him and his dad, you know, very close. And one day, you know, the son was really good friends with this other kid. He was from Israel, and the kid was born. So there was some sort of misunderstanding where something happened, and the son ran home to the father and said, you know, that son, that guy from Israel, his father said, I can't play with him anymore. And the father said to the son, well, why is that? And the son says, well, he said it was because, like, I'm a convert or something like that. He doesn't want that in his house or whatever. So, you know, of course, the father's enraged. Like, how can this be? This is an outrage, right? And then, you know, in shul, he's sitting right back at the guy who supposedly said this. And he's, like, you know, thinking, like, really hard, like, okay, should I just sit here thinking bad things behind this guy's head? Like, I'm sitting here, right? I didn't even ask the guy if he really said this. And I'm angry at him. So he's like, you know, it's something I should probably bring up. So he says, you know, my son came home and told me this is something he really said. And the guy's like, oh, no, I didn't say that. It's all a misunderstanding. Really, I said, like, oh, I don't have the time today or something like that. And somehow your son, it was a miscommunication, turned out. And the guy really didn't say those things. And so the father of the son is like, I'm really relieved that I asked him that, you know, because I would have sat in the back of the shul for who knows how long thinking bad things about this guy. And really didn't say it. Which, like, so it's like the conclusion is like, and tell me if I'm wrong here, especially when it comes to dating and marriage, that the key to a really good relationship is trust. And you can't go around bringing up uncomfortable issues because, you know, you just don't want to bring it up, right? Because you can be sitting there thinking bad about this person this whole time, and really, there's a different side of the story that you don't know.
There's definitely what to be gained from putting things on the table. And one of the hallmarks of Lashon Hara is that it's not putting things on the table. It's judging the person and deciding and acting without giving the person a chance, shooting them in the back. And that's why it's called words that envelop, like they swallow. Gam el yitotzcha lanetzach. David HaMelech says, okay, this is how you behave, then I wish you, Hashem too, should destroy you for eternity. Yachtecha v'yisachacha me'ohel. God should cut you down, God should break you, God should distance you from his tent. V'sherechcha me'eretz chayim se'la. And you should be uprooted from the world to come for eternity. V'yiru tzadikim v'yira'u v'alav yischaku. And let the righteous see how you are paid back, because there are going to be people, like someone asked tonight, that are going to say, how could this happen to the city of Kohanim? So David HaMelech says, I wish on you, Doeg, that you should be so punished, and everyone should see it. And see how you're full and you have no portion in the world to come. And that should cause them to be more God-fearing people, not like the Chil Hashem that happened. And the truth is that that's what happened. We have a Mishnah in Sanhedrin. The Mishnah says, Kol Yisrael yesh lehem chelek l'olam haba. All of Israel has a portion to the world to come, except for Doeg HaDomi. He's one of those mentioned in the Mishnah. He doesn't have. Why are you guys so surprised? Mishnah. Where do we have Mishnah at?
I heard one guy say that he relies on the belief in the world to come to stay sane. Because if you're an atheist and you say, this world's all you got, there's no such thing as justice. There's people running around, being corrupt, getting rich. They die rich. They die rich sometimes. Look at all these dictators that die happy. Right. So if you believe there is a world to come, they do give up what's coming to them, the world to come, however people don't believe. What are you
going to
think, you know?
Mishnah says, three kings, four common people, do not have a portion in the world to come. Three kings, Yeravam, Achav, Menashe.
They really
four. Oh, so that's a machlokas in the Mishnah. Very good. Review this as Menashe has a portion of the world to come. He did tshuva. Who are the four regular people? Aleph, Beis, Gimel, Dalet. Aleph, Achitofel. Beis, Bilam. Gimel, Gehazi. Dalet, Doeg. Our Doeg over here.
Why didn't Gehazi
know?
What did he do?
Oh,
I remember. Well, that's the guy from Melachim.
Okay.
So if they don't have a portion of the world, then where are they right now?
Aha, it's a good question. Okay, back to Tehillim. Hinei hagevir lo yasim Elohim ma'uzo vayivtach berov osho ya'oz behavato. People will look at him and they'll say, look at that man. He didn't put his faith in Hashem. He didn't assume his strength was from Hashem. He assumed his strength stems from what he does, as we discussed in the beginning of the chapter. Vayivtach berov asho, he had confidence in his tremendous wealth. Ya'oz behavato, he strengthened himself by his capacity to destroy others. He assumed his strength stems from his capacity to affect, to hurt, to destroy others. And look what happened to him. Vani kezayit ra'anan beveit Elohim patachti v'chesed Elohim olam va'ed. And I, says David HaMelech, I want to be firmly planted in the house of Hashem. Here I wish upon him he should be uprooted and have no portion. And even though now I'm composing the song as I am on the run, he's trying to kill me, Shaul's trying to kill me, but I pray Hashem should leave me as a firmly planted olive tree in the house of Hashem. Just as the olive tree is one that keeps on producing fruits. Whenever you think of something old and consistent, you think of the olive tree. Keeps on going, keeps on producing. So too I should be like that olive tree. I should be ra'anan. I should be lush, filled with sap. Beveit Elokim, in the house of Hashem. Batachti v'chesed Elokim olam ve'ed. Because my faith is not in my strength, and not in my power, and not in my capacity to hurt others, but rather my faith is in Hashem's kindness. So that's why Hashem should let me last. Odecha le'olam ki asihita vakaveh shimcha chitov neged chasidecha. And David concludes the chapter turning to Hashem and saying, Hashem, I thank you for eternity because you've done as I've asked you. And when you do it, I will continue thanking you for eternity. And my hope is in your name that you'll do continued kindness to me. Neged chasidecha, as your pious ones, your extra pious ones will witness and see that you continue paying me off for my putting my faith in you, which is again the hallmark of the tzaddik, the hallmark of David. And here we go back to the first Lashon Hara. The first Lashon Hara is the serpent tells Adam and Eve, ah, God's keeping a secret from you. If you only eat from that fruit, look at what you could do. So, you can do. That's at the root of Lashon Hara. I can, and I can circumvent God. The question is, will I do it or won't I do it? That's what's going to define the outcome. No God in the picture. If I eat from the forbidden fruit, I'll be able to get away with what I want. If I don't eat from the forbidden fruit, then I won't get what I want. Lashon Hara is always that thought. If I affect, then it'll happen. If Doeg speaks bad about David, then David will be caught. David will have no place to hide. If he doesn't speak bad about David, then David will get away with it. It's that thought that goes beyond our hishtadlut, and it goes beyond and allows a person to be evil.